We know how we feel about the Patriots in New England, but what's the feeling around the rest of the NFL? Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network joins me to talk Patriots and to go around the rest of the league. Plus, the Dodgers take game one of the World Series, and the Celtics' young guns put on an electric performance against the New York Knicks. The Globe's Joe Sullivan will be here to break that down. It's Wednesday, October 25th, 2017. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. The Patriots are 5-2 after a rout of the Atlanta Falcons in a Super Bowl rematch. And after a shaky start to the season, the expectations for the season for the Patriots are back to Super Bowl level. But what moves can the Patriots make to solidify their standing as a Super Bowl favorite? And which teams around the league pose the biggest threat to Tom Brady in his pursuit of a sixth Super Bowl ring? Joining me is NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport. You can follow him on Twitter. He's at Rapsheet. You can see Ian throughout the week on the NFL Network's NFL Total Access at 7 p.m. Eastern and every Sunday on NFL Game Day Morning at 7 a.m. Eastern. Ian, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for making the time here. We appreciate it. You coming on Season Ticket.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it. Always happy to do it.
So I want to start off asking you about the Patriots. Obviously, they got off to a little bit of a slow start here. They're rounding into form, as I mentioned, at 5-2. They had their best defensive performance of the season on Sunday against the Falcons, the first time all year they held a quarterback under 300 yards passing. Is this the real Patriots defense? Have the Patriots figured it out? Or are they in a position where they're going to have to add some guys, add some personnel, add some bodies to have a defense that can have them be a team that repeats as Super Bowl champions?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're close to the defense they want to be. And one of the things that's kind of weird about the Patriots and something that seems to happen almost every year is, you know, it's almost like they treat the first 3 or 4 or 5 weeks as like an extended preseason. So they'll do it just to say, all right, what's our team going to look like? What different combinations work? What are we going to use down the stretch? And it's like they experiment and are okay with that because they know that when it comes down to it, they're just going to win enough games where they're going to be fine. You know, it's like I remember a couple years back, they like really liberally rotated offensive linemen just to see what combinations work. They weren't worried about winning one game. They're worried about winning 10 games later in the season. You know, and I think this year what you've sort of seen is in offense, I know you asked about the defense, but you've seen an offense where they've thrown deep a lot. They have had Tom Brady get hit a lot, and now they're kind of adjusting and reeling back and maybe not taking as many deep shots, protecting Brady a little more, and then probably eventually going to say, all right, this is what our offense looks like. You know, it definitely took a while for everyone to, you know, kind of get their assignments down. I'll be curious when Gilmore gets back, assuming that's this week, you know, if he has kind of improved from where he was mentally earlier in the year or if he's back to kind of struggling, because even without him, they look pretty good and pretty sound. And obviously the focus is so much more on being sound than it is on just being talented.
Yeah, you're right about that. And I want to ask you about Stephon Gilmore. Obviously, the Patriots brought him in the offseason. He was their big ticket free agent item, 5-year deal, $65 million, more than $30 million guaranteed. And it's looked like a little bit of an awkward fit. I mean, the last game he played against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he played well, but they basically just really reduced him to playing a lot of man coverage. They super simplified it. What's the thought around the league in terms of Stephon Gilmore and his fit with Bill Belichick and the Patriots, who tend to be more of a cerebral type of outfit?
Yeah, and I think, you know, so much of what the Patriots do is just saying, all right, we have this guy, he's on our team, what is his best thing he does? We're only going to have him do that. And if Gilmore can, at this point, just play man coverage, I think they'll say, all right, like, let's just only do what you do well because you're good and we need you on the field. But the fit was, you know, I think you're right. Around the league, people kind of raise their eyebrows a little bit. It's rarely the Patriots, you know, who go out and spend for free agents. It's rarely the Patriots who bring in players from the outside who make more money than the players do on the inside. You know, like you notice, the one really big receiver they brought in made less than everyone. You know, and I think that was something that was important to them. You know, the other receivers they considered, guys like, you know, Robert Woods and Kenny Britt. I mean, those guys would have been good fits, but would have made more than Edelman. I think that was a problem for the team. You know, so they're always cognizant of how free agents sort of fit in. And to bring a guy like Gilmore in who makes more than everyone, who was up and down the last couple of years, I think most people assumed, well, obviously the Patriots know what they're doing, but up to this point, it's been a little different than I think the Patriots had wished.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I mean, he's looked a little lost in translation in the defense, yeah. And there have been communication issues. And sometimes with the Patriots, you hit on this, Ian, and you know it from your days covering the Patriots for the Boston Herald, that sometimes they'd rather have like a less talented guy who will just execute the defense, like a Johnson Batamosi, than someone who is more physically talented, but from a processing standpoint, can't process as quickly and make those adjustments. I mean, they need their guys to process quickly so that they are playing, not spending time sort of buffering, you know, like you're trying to watch Netflix or something. And that's sort of what it's been like with Gilmore. You see his brain is just buffering, trying to figure out what's going on. You brought up something interesting, though, that I want to get into. The way Stephon Gilmore affected sort of the pay structure of the defense and the locker room hierarchy, because all offseason, Malcolm Butler, who obviously up to Gilmore coming here was the number one corner, hero of Super Bowl 49, Pro Bowl caliber corner, he was trying to get paid like a Pro Bowl caliber corner, and the Patriots sort of resisted. He's back this year on the restricted free agent tender, 1 year, $3.91 million. Is there anything going on between the Patriots and Butler in terms of a longer-term deal, especially since his play has ticked up the last couple of weeks?
I have not heard anything going on. I wouldn't expect anything to go on. I wouldn't expect anything to happen until this offseason. And then, you know, especially now that he's played better, you know, he certainly seems like someone to me where he's going to hit the free agent market and probably get paid somewhere else, which is fine. You know, they've already paid Gilmore. Rarely do they have two players at the same position who make among the highest in the league. So, you know, I doubt the Patriots are going to play two corners at more than $13 million a year. And to me, like, that's okay. You know, Butler will leave. They'll get a third-round compensatory pick. They'll have turned an undrafted free agent into 4 years of quality starts and, you know, Super Bowl hero and a third-round compensatory pick. Like, that's an incredible investment to me. And I think he probably should leave and, you know, go get paid by a team that's going to really love having him.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the path that Logan Ryan obviously took.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, he took that, he got paid, you know, won a couple of Super Bowls. It worked out for both sides. What do you know, Ian, about this Tom Brady injury? Obviously, a couple of weeks ago, the Jets week, he had to miss 2 days of practice time, which is pretty unusual for him. He's looked like he's not quite the same from an accuracy standpoint. They're saying it's the left shoulder, but other people have speculated there might be some other injury there that is hampering Tom Brady. What do you know about Brady's injury situation?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I know for sure is that there is a left shoulder injury to the AC joint. That is what I know for sure. You know, if there are some other injuries along with that, it's nothing that I can 100% say I know what this injury is.
A lot of discussion around the Patriots centers around the quarterback position, not just because of the greatness of Tom Brady and not just because he's 40 years old, but their backup, Jimmy Garoppolo. A lot of people think he could be a starter, obviously, in the NFL. The Patriots had opportunities to trade him to teams, including the Cleveland Browns in the offseason. They did not. A lot of people are wondering, Ian, how this story ends with Jimmy Garoppolo and the Patriots. He can be a free agent after this year. How do you think this goes? Do you think they'll franchise him or trade him? Will Jimmy Garoppolo be with the Patriots next year?
We've seen them use the tag and trade in the past, Matt Castle. You know, obviously is the one there, and I think it worked out for everyone. From what I know, the Patriots never seriously considered or even barely considered trading Garoppolo last year. They do believe he is the future franchise quarterback. They love him. So to let him go would, to me, seem very, very far-fetched. I mean, it could happen, theoretically. You know, they could tag him and then get a deal that's so good that they just can't help but deal him, because everyone has a price, right?
That's right.
I would be very surprised at this point if they moved him at all. Like, you have someone who is your answer at quarterback for the next 10 years. You know, if they think he's a great quarterback, you know, and we've seen one great game and then we've seen an injury, if they think he's a great quarterback, then you just don't let him leave for anything.
Let's go around the rest of the NFL here for a little bit. I want to ask you about a couple of teams that I think have surprised some people this year, and people are sort of looking at them and saying, wait a second, are these teams for real? I'm going to start with the team that has the best record in the NFL right now, and that is the Philadelphia Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly. They are 6-1. They suffered some major injuries on Monday night against the Redskins. They lose left tackle Jason Peters, a 9-time Pro Bowler, and linebacker Jordan Hicks. One, do you think the Eagles are for real, and how affected will they be by these injuries?
I do think they're real because I think Carson Wentz is awesome. And, you know, you can never quite tell when a quarterback is going to go from, hey, this guy's pretty good, they didn't get a bust in the first round, to, all right, he's the next really, really great quarterback in the league. And we've all sort of been waiting for, like, who's going to be the next of the Brady, Manning, Breeze, Rivers, right? Like, Jameis is good, but hasn't quite taken that leap yet. Certainly his team hasn't. Mariota has been good, but not great, great. You know, Luck has been injured. Like, you know, Watson seems like he's going to be one of those guys, but where are the other guys, right? I think Wentz is kind of showing us now, like, he's going to be great, and maybe Goff will be too. I think the Eagles are really, really good. This Jason Peters injury, the Hicks injury is okay. The Jason Peters injury is very bad. He is their rock. He is one of the best players in the league still. He's 35 years old, so I don't know how much longer he had left, but he was still holding it down there on the left side. You know, I would imagine they keep Lane Johnson at right, but that is a big hole. And you know, I think they'll be okay, but probably not quite as effective.
And you mentioned Jared Goff there. I think one of the big surprises in the NFL this year, the Los Angeles Rams at 5-2, and not only 5-2 under first-year head coach Sean McVay, but leading the NFL in points per game with 212 points overall, 30.3 per game, the only team averaging more than 30 points per game in the NFL. I don't think anybody saw that coming. Do you think that they're a legitimate contender?
I think so. I mean, they have enough wins where even if they kind of like naturally correct a little bit, they'll still be fine. To me, they look like a really good wild card team, like a team you would not like to face in a wild card game. You know, we'll see. Maybe they get a win or two more and they end up winning division. But, you know, what they've done has still been incredible, right? Like they took a terrible team that were not well coached, that had, you know, offensive coordinator who was probably the worst in the league. And you get a couple good coaches around them, and all of a sudden you realize these players are pretty good.
Yeah, they've been one of the real surprises in the league, probably the biggest surprise in the NFC. I would say the biggest surprise in the AFC, in my opinion, Ian, the Jacksonville Jaguars at 4-3. They are tied for first place in the AFC South. They've had two games where they've registered 10 sacks, including one this past Sunday against the Indianapolis Colts and former Patriots quarterback Jacoby Brissett. They're now going by the name Saxonville, which is just kind of cool. I just like it. I think it's good. Do you think they can keep it up? Because their quarterback play has been a little shaky with Blake Bortles, and Leonard Fournette has been good, but he has an injury history going back to LSU.
Right. First of all, Saxonville is great. I'm very impressed with whoever came up with that. And it's not like a catchy, funny slogan. It is literally their defense. They sack people all the time. So I think that's really going to become a thing. And, you know, the best thing about the Jacksonville Jaguars now, besides that their defense is just awesome, is that Blake Bortles is starting to understand who he is. Like, he is not the top three pick, future superstar, throw-it-all-around quarterback. He is a game manager who, if he makes smart throws and doesn't turn the ball over, can be a quarterback of a winning team as long as everything else around him is pretty good. And once you realize who you are, it's like once Alex Smith realized who he was, he actually became a really good quarterback because he never tried to do anything too much. He just got the ball in the hands of his guys who were good, and they became a pretty good playoff team. And if Bortles continues in this progression, I don't see why they wouldn't be a playoff team. I mean, their defense is so good that they literally ruin everything you're trying to do as an offense.
Yeah, they're great. I mean, they just dominate up front. Calais Campbell leading the NFL in sacks. I want to ask you, we're less than a week away from the trade deadline, October 31st. I know you're a big baseball fan. You're actually a big Mets fan, so my condolences.
I am.
Yeah. How do you feel about the new manager quickly?
If it's someone good, energetic, young, who can be around for a while, like, I'm okay with it.
Mickey Callaway, the Indians pitching coach, the new manager of the Mets. Again, my condolences. I know you're a Mets fan. This was a tough season.
It's been
rough. Not the same.
Justin Turner just hit bombs. It's just killing me.
Yeah, I know. That's another thing. Justin Turner, the Mets, another player the Mets somehow let go. Yes, performing in the World Series for the Dodgers last night, hitting the game-winning two-run homer. But again, you know, the NFL trade deadline, not like the Major League Baseball trade deadline, but there can be some action here. What are you hearing around the league? Are there any big name guys, maybe like a Jarvis Landry or somebody like that, who could get dealt at the deadline? And what do you think the Patriots would be looking for at this trade deadline, which is October 31st?
Yeah, coming up, I think probably the biggest question is at tackle. You know, Dwayne Brown showed up for the Texans. Think he's probably going to play for them, but, you know, could someone offer a lot and prime away? I think they probably could. You know, Martavis Bryant, the Steelers have said he's not going to get dealt. Okay. Everything has a price, so, you know, we'll see what they end up doing. I think they probably keep him, but we'll see. You know, a couple other smaller type names, Kahaha from the Saints, pass rusher, former second rounder, was inactive last week. I know could it be had. I mean, that might be someone the Patriots could take a look at. It's never the biggest names. It's always kind of the complimentary pieces. And I would expect that to be similar this week.
And we'll get you out on this one. I just want to tell a little story here about Ian. Most of you guys remember Ian. He's obviously a big-time NFL Network guy. If you're looking for football information, there's only two people you're really going to go to. It's Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter. They're right there, neck and neck. It's one of the great rivalries in sports. But I don't know if people know that, but you have this, you're so big time. They NFL Network installed a studio in your house for you to broadcast from. Isn't that true?
It is. And I don't know if it's that I'm so big time. I think it's more so that anytime they need me, they can say, go on camera. And I literally have no excuse. Oh, you're in your PJs? Great. Just put on the suit top and get in front of the camera because news just broke. And that's basically like, you know, there'll be some times at 10:30 at night when it's suit top, PJ bottom, and on TV.
Wow. It's literally like that old John Clayton ESPN commercial where he was like, you know, doing it from his room with his mom, like calling up to him. That's literally your life.
Yeah, except for me, instead of mom, it's like I got the boys playing with like trucks and, you know, throwing balls at each other's heads in the next room. And then I'm like doing all serious studio stuff in the office. It's an odd mix.
It is. But you handle it really well, man. And we appreciate you coming on. That's NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport. You can follow him on Twitter. You probably already do. At Rap Sheet. He has over a million Twitter followers and rising, and he's always tweeting. You can also see Ian throughout the week on the NFL Network's NFL Total Access program. That's at 7 p.m. Eastern, and catch him every Sunday on NFL Game Day morning at 7 a.m. Eastern time. Ian, thanks once again for making the time. I know you have to get back to the phone. There's probably GMs and coaches around the league who are wondering what you've been doing for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, I just got to hope no news broke while we were talking, but I think I'm okay. So it's good talking to you. I enjoyed it, though.
All right, I did too. Thanks, Ian. Appreciate it.
All right, take care.
All right, that's Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network. Up next, we're going to switch things up a little bit. Dodgers pitcher Clayton Kershaw rewrote his postseason legacy in a scorching hot game one of the World Series between the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Houston Astros, and we'll talk some Celtics as well. Jaylen Brown celebrated his 21st birthday in style against the New York Knicks. That's coming up right after this. Welcome back. A quick note, if you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, or if you have an Android phone, you can check us out on Stitcher or Google Play. Subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, moving right along, let's talk about the World Series. Opened up last night. Game one goes to the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Altuve. Into right center field. Should end it. Puig is there. Dodgers win game one.
Clayton Kershaw sort of flipped the script in terms of his postseason reputation. He did in a big way. Struck out 11 over 7 innings, and the Dodgers get the victory. Here with me now is sports editor of the Boston Globe, Joe Sullivan. Joe, welcome back to Season Ticket.
Chris, I feel like a high schooler whose detention is finally over. When you prowled the halls of Lynn Classical, I believe?
That is correct, yes.
Did you ever get detention?
Did I think I got detention once or twice.
Once or twice? I'm surprised. Yeah. I wouldn't think you'd be any detentions. That's interesting.
I was mostly a model student.
You're a little wilder than I thought then.
Yeah, you don't know me as well as you think, Joe. You don't. But we're happy to have you back on Season Ticket. Your ban has been lifted. Of course, that's all in good fun. But what did you think of the World Series last night with the Dodgers and the Astros? And what's your take on game one?
All right. So here's what I want to talk about. The World Series, the Dodgers, and baseball in general. I'm going to compare it to NASCAR, Chris. Are you ready for this? So you know what the key to NASCAR is? The tire changers. The guys, to me, NASCAR is just a tire-changing contest. The guys who change the tires fastest win the race. The drivers are just like, you know, jockeys in horse racing. They're just along for the ride. So Here's what's most important in baseball now, without a doubt, is the bullpen. So you can talk about Clayton Kershaw all you want. And sure, of course, if he gives up like 2-3-run homers in the second inning, the game might be over. But the bullpen is where the games are won in baseball now. That's what it's all about. They're the tire changers of baseball. And, you know, the Dodgers' bullpen has gone 25 straight innings without giving up a run, Chris. So, look, if they get through six innings and they're ahead, they're going to win.
Yeah, their bullpen has been outstanding in the playoffs. It was 17 consecutive scoreless innings against the Chicago Cubs in the National League Championship Series. And I think some people were surprised that Dave Roberts, the manager of the Dodgers, took Kershaw out. He had only thrown 83 pitches through seven innings and struck out 11. But when you have Brandon Morrow and Kenley Jansen to go to, I mean, Kenley Jansen's like the new Mariano Rivera. He's as money as it gets. He's probably the best closer in the game. It's either he or Craig Kimbrell who would be the best closer in the game. So that bullpen has been money. And we've seen this the last couple of years. I mean, that's the trend, as you said, in baseball. You have to go to the bullpen. I mean, last year the Cubs had Aroldis Chapman, who they got for the stretch run. And we saw the Indians with Andrew Miller. And a couple of years ago, the Kansas City Royals had a very, very deep bullpen. That's where the Dodgers' advantage is in this series, Joe. It's in the bullpen. And that bullpen, along with Clayton Kershaw, really silenced the Astros, who have one of the best offenses in the history of baseball. I mean, it's a top 10 offense in the history of the league, 896 runs. They hit 238 home runs this year, but they got one run on a solo homer from Alex Bregman. That's it. If the Dodgers pitch like that, they're going to take the series.
So now here's what I want Dave Roberts to do. I want him to bring Kershaw back twice, like the old days. He's only, what did he throw, 38 pitches, you said, before he left the game?
83 pitches.
All right.
38 pitches would be really impressive seven innings. I think that would be some kind of record.
All right. I was exaggerating to make a point.
Okay.
Now he could start three games in the series, like Mickey Lolich or someone like that back from the 60s. That's what I want, Chris.
You know what the best part of this game was, Joe? And look, this game was, it started, it was 103 degrees at first pitch in Chavez Ravine at Dodger Stadium. But the best part of this game, 2 hours and 28 minutes.
Oh,
the
man.
Fastest World Series game since 1992. And this postseason, no game had been under 3 hours. And this one clocks in under 2.5 hours. Good job, Los Angeles Dodgers. You're making baseball great again. Thank you.
That's great. Chris, I have great memories of covering a World Series at Dodger Stadium back in 1977. And the auxiliary press box, they would never do this now. I was in the auxiliary press box, which was in the upper deck right behind home plate. So in this beautiful weather, it wasn't 105 degrees that year when the Dodgers played the Yankees. I'm sitting in the upper deck right behind home plate with my workspace there. One of the best workspaces I've ever had, Chris.
Oh, it's a great
Dodger
view.
And Dodger Stadium is just a great
place.
Yeah,
what are those mountains? Are those the San Gabriel Mountains out there?
You've got me. I don't know.
Well, it's a beautiful view. I mean, I've been lucky enough to go to Dodger Stadium. I'll tell you, best ballpark hot dog in Major League Baseball, the Dodger dog. Sorry, Fenway Frank, but you're number two. All right, let's switch things over here to the Celtics. We'll get back to sort of local sports. People panicked a little bit, Joe, when the Celtics got after that 0-2 start and obviously the gruesome injury to free agent Gordon Hayward. But they've won two in a row. They beat the New York Knicks last night, 110-89. And it was a youth movement. It was Jaylen Brown, who's in his second year.
Brown with the steal. Jaylen. Blow those candles out.
He had 23 points. That's a career high for him. Did it on his 21st birthday. And then Jason Tatum, the rookie, had 22 points. I thought this was a really encouraging win for the Celtics.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And they were both sensational. And they're so young. It really look. We got it. We need a larger sample. We don't want to go off the deep end and say they're going to be great. But they sure looked great last night, and it really has to give Celtics fans, you know, some real. They should have a lot of optimism. And on top of this, your boy Kyrie has not played that great yet.
Yeah,
and they're still 2-2.
He was better last night. He had 20 points, 5 of 13 shooting. I thought Tommy Heinsohn said something on the broadcast last night that was really insightful, and that is that Kyrie Irving is still trying to figure out where he's going to find his shots in mm-hmm. this offense. There's a lot more movement and motion in the Celtics offense than what Kyrie Irving is used to from Cleveland, and he's passing up some shots he shouldn't. He's overpassing, and then he's taking some shots he shouldn't, because I think he's trying to find his equilibrium here. You know, he doesn't want to be the ball hog Kyrie from Cleveland, but at the same time, you know, he's the best player on the team, and they need him to score. So I think he's still sort of feeling his way through it. I'll tell you who else was big in the game last night. Al Horford, 13 points, 13 rebounds, and that followed up a good game he had against the Philadelphia 76ers. Al can't fade into the background for them now, especially
six assists too, Chris, I think.
He had five assists.
Five assists, yeah.
I mean, he can't fade into the background now with this Hayward injury.
No.
You know, they need him to perform like a max player, and they need him to score double digits pretty much every game.
So I'm going to go back and talk about something Tommy said in a game, a different game, when Kyrie got the ball and everything stopped, and he gave it, he growled out, "Move the ball." And we're not seeing too much of that. We still see some of it where he just stops at the arc and holds it. I really despise that type of basketball. So we need him to keep moving, fit in. You're right, and Tommy's right. He's fitting in. Let's see where it goes from here.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing is look, it's only four games, and they're in a situation where you're trying to meld this thing together. And I think that Gordon Hayward was a big part of the chemistry of this team because – He's friendly with Kyrie. He played for Brad Stevens, the Celtics coach in college. I think he was supposed to be sort of the glue that bonded this whole thing together. And without him, I just think it's going to take a little bit longer here. But I really liked what I saw against the Knicks. And look, you have to take it with a grain of salt because it's the Knicks. They're one of the laughingstock franchises in the NBA, and they're 0-3 this year. But when you look at those young guys, I mean, the future is so bright. Even if the Celtics aren't a championship team this year, when you look at Jaylen Brown, who has superstar potential, and Jason Tatum, you know, Paul Pierce, Celtic great, you know, leader of the last Celtic team to win an NBA title in 2008, looks at Jason Tatum and says, wow, he reminds me of a young me. That's really high praise. Their future is really bright, even if this year is not quite going to be the season people thought it was going to be, Joe.
You're absolutely right, Chris. I can't disagree with you. I think when Hayward is going to be a facilitator type, he's not a selfish player. He'll fit in with what Stevens wants to do offensively. Bright, sunny skies for the Celtics, I think.
And you know what was also encouraging about Brown and Tatum? And these guys are really close. In fact, they say they're working on a nickname. They got to come up with something.
Oh, for the two of them?
Yeah,
oh,
they
well,
have to come
fun.
Up with something. I mean, they're really close. And the big thing for me in looking at these two guys, I think if you had a question mark for young guys a lot of times coming in the league, can they shoot the NBA three-pointer, which is a longer shot than the college three-pointer? Last night, Tatum 4 of 6. Jaylen Brown, who when he came into the league last year as the number 3 overall pick, people said his shot's broken, he can't shoot, he's never going to be able to shoot. He was 3 of 6 from 3 last night. If those guys are able to develop range on their shots and shoot three-pointers, they're so athletic and so good at getting to the rim, that's going to open up the Celtics' whole offense if teams have to go out and extend and defend them.
Yeah, and it's Brad's offensive theory, too. The three would be critical for it to succeed, and they need to shoot the threes. I got something going about nicknames. Are you ready? So we got to throw in KJ, right? And we have Jason and Jaylen. What about the KJs? You going to go for this? The KJs?
The KJs.
Yes, and I already have a theme song for them.
You know, have there's a theme song?
This just like jumped into my head. I'm telling you. What, you know the song Cool Jerk?
I don't.
You know it's an old song from the 60s? Cool Jerk. Dan, Cool Jerk.
Now I know it. Now, okay, you hit me, but now I know what you're talking about. I'm absolutely sure this is on Jason Tatum's Spotify playlist.
Oh, I bet. I got the KJs. I'm in.
Yeah, we'll see. They're still working on it. They're trying to come up with some sort of nickname. Maybe they'll have it in place by Thursday when the Celtics return to action against the Milwaukee Bucks in Milwaukee. Joe, great to see you. Great as always to have you here on Season Ticket. Dropping some musical knowledge. Thank you.
It's great to be back, Chris.
All right, Joe, thanks again. Well, finally, the cheap seats. Have you ever wanted to know what it looks like to watch a baseball game from the Red Sox dugout? If the Red Sox get their way, some fans will pay to find out next season. The Sox got approval on Tuesday from the Boston Landmarks Commission to install dugout-style seats along the first baseline next to the Red Sox actual dugout. The plan now just needs approval from Major League Baseball. These subterranean seats will provide a field-level view of the action at Fenway. Unlike this segment, they definitely won't be known as the cheap seats. Fenway already has the smallest foul territory in the major leagues. These seats will carve out even more territory for fans. The Sox appear willing to trade a few outs for a few more seats. That's definitely not going to make new manager Alex Cora's hot seat in the dugout any more comfortable. That's it for this edition of Season Ticket. If you liked us, be sure to tell a friend and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. For more great sports stories, subscribe to the Boston Globe. Season Ticket is a production of the WBRI Lab and the Boston Globe. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.